Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We have a new president. A heavily guarded inauguration ceremony went smoothly as Joe Biden was sworn in as the 46th president of the United States yesterday. Well, how will the country look different under his administration? How is he approaching the pandemic? Are South Dakotans in for any big changes? And in one of his last acts as president, Donald Trump raised some eyebrows in South Dakota with the pardon of Paul Erickson, who was sentenced to 7 years in prison last year for defrauding investors. For a look at these stories, we welcome our Dakota political junkies today. John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Lori.
And Mike Card is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. Welcome back, Mike.
I'm pleased to be here. Thank you for the invitation. Good to be with each of you.
I want to start, if we might, with the editorial that John Hunter wrote for the Madison Daily Leader, John, and I'm just going to read back my favorite part, which I sort of want printed on a t-shirt somehow in the future, but you say citizens like us are capable of deciding for ourselves if something is good or bad or something in between. We don't have to look at our voter registration card, then watch the TV news program that coincides with our party registration to make up our minds. And I just love that. Thank you for saying, you don't have to look down at your voter registration card to decide what you think about something. And what a great thing to set up how people view the inauguration or the transfer of power or the, you know, COVID-19 memorial and the way that people are remembering and honoring healthcare workers. You get to make up your own mind. Tell me a little bit about some of your thoughts going into this week. Because you were also looking at some Madison Regional Health Foundation tribute to healthcare workers. Again, not political. Say more about that for people who haven't read the article yet, please.
Well, you know, it's strange to me that you have this worldwide health crisis that started roughly a year ago and that it somehow has become a Republican or a Democratic issue, that the R's feel this way and the D's feel another way. And it doesn't need to be. I mean, we can certainly have disagreements, but why would they fall along political lines? And so you might say, okay, old people think this, young people think this. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can delineate that, or medical professionals, or whatever. But so we've converted so many things in our lives to Republican and Democrat issues that we don't seem to be thinking for ourselves anymore. Now, I did ask this, if you remember, a few years ago when Tim Johnson was just leaving Congress and he'd chosen not to run for the Senate again, and he kind of stopped in here at the paper, and I think it was kind of a farewell tour, and so we had some nice time together. But I remember asking him the question, do you think more members of Congress have turned over their vote to the party leadership? And he said yes. And so that means that, you know, you go there under a particular banner, and from then on it's going to be McConnell or Pelosi or whoever is voting for you, right? So what wouldn't it be? It would take all the fun out of being in Congress if you didn't get to vote what you thought yourself, right? So you just do what the leadership tells you. So I think there are, and a lot of the rest of us get caught up in that too. If you're registered a certain way, then you start aligning yourself all the time. And that's been accelerated a little bit, Lori, too, with the advent of TV news programs that lean toward one political party or another. So you either watch the Democrat news or you watch the Republican news. And you start to think like that. So I, what's wrong with thinking for ourselves sometimes?
Mike Card, you want to add anything to that? Because it doesn't seem like a revolutionary thing that he's saying there, but somehow it feels like it in some ways because of the culture, the political leadership, us, social media. Like, I don't have a reason for it, but what do you want to add, Mike?
Well, I think what I would add is that it fits within our human nature. We easily receive information that fits with our previously held beliefs. And where news was at least perceived when there were fewer networks and fewer opportunities to get news, the perception is that you you just got a relatively unbiased perspective. Now, there's less of a pretense of that, especially with the national media, where they're looking for advertisers who are looking for certain demographics. They get controversial. And as human beings, we accept information that fits with what we previously believe, and we keep going back to the same place. And in a sense, that same place is likely to radicalize us as human beings. And so the modern media has, you know, and I'm not blaming the news media, it's the modern media has fit with our biological brains to look for information that we already believe. We see it very clearly.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, and I've been paying close attention to this conversation about civics, and John, we'll start with you. You know, the governor writes in the Federalist that children are being indoctrinated, and then we just heard Tiffany Sanderson, you know, talking to the Education Committee about how this is the time that social studies curriculum and standards are set to be revised. And one sounds, you know, very dramatic and, you know, take up your flag and talk about what kids learn and they don't understand communism. And the other sounds like, hey, we go over these standards all the time. And yeah, we should look at our social studies standards. And yeah, we should look at what we're teaching students in South Dakota, what we require of them. It's time. One seems pretty, inflammatory, and the other seems pretty, you know, boring in some ways, but yet we're all talking about civics, John. So how have you sort of been watching that conversation unfold?
Well, I think that I think it's taken, how can you say it, a revisionist theory a little bit to an extreme, where if we are talking civics, then we used to agree on kind of a common set of what happened in history. You know, the development of the Constitution and so forth. And so, but there's this kind of revisionist movement that said, no, that's not really what happened. It was completely different. And so, and I think President Biden addressed that a little bit in his inauguration speech. He said, let's dispute lots of things, but let's not dispute the facts, right? Let's not change the facts and say, oh, the facts are different. If they were different, fine, but in most cases, I think people are trying to revise these things just to meet their opinions, and Mike knows this better than I do, but if you go to the classroom and say, okay, we're going to teach Republican civics, right, or we're going to teach Democrat civics, and that would, then, you know, Franklin Roosevelt looks great, and, you know, Richard Nixon looks terrible, or, you know, you name who it is and teach it that way, and I think you'd love to keep some objective people, whether it's academics or historians or whatever, be in charge of those things and not political leaders.
Mm. Mike, what do you want to add to that?
I'm not sure I can add much to what John offered us. You know, I have had students check my party registration, you know, since the voter rolls are open. And I managed to irritate students of both parties. But I think that's what our goal is to identify, as John said, what are the facts? And then to say, well, how would it be different if slavery was the defining moment for the founding of our country? And you can make an argument for that. But you can also make an argument that there's an economic interest. And I think our goal in higher levels of K-12 education, as well as in college, is to teach people to look at multiple sides. You have to go out and look for it. If we choose our particular media or perspective, we're only getting one side, and we have to make up our own minds, but we have to go out and do that.
Yeah. And Lori, the podcasts or whatever that people are referring to, and Mike is hitting it on the head, where, you know, if you go to a website that's republicanstink.com, well, you're not going to get Republicans to look at that, right? You're preaching to the choir. You're just reinforcing things that that Mike said biologically we already believe. But, you know, if in the Daschle-Thune race 20 years ago or whatever that was, then there were a lot, there was kind of the beginning of all these blogs and a lot of the social media kind of stuff, but but there were no blogs that would say, you know, objective opinion of this race.com, right? It was already predetermined what it was, where it was heading.
I'm wondering, John, if you want to add to this idea of, you know, people looking at history through new lenses, though, because there is so much. I mean, when we looked this year, last 2020, we looked at the 100th anniversary of suffrage. I mean, just throughout the year, as we talked to different scholars, there were so many areas of history that had not been explored, you know, original documents that no historian had ever looked at about some of the connections between suffragists and indigenous people, the Haudenosaunee women, and you know, did these women know Harriet Tubman? Well, that's a question that hasn't been discovered yet. So go look in archives somewhere. So as, you know, as people look at things that really weren't in some of those textbooks because the research hasn't been done, don't we rethink what we thought before about certain things? The things I learned about women's suffrage in, you know, high school and college has changed as we have added to our historical record, to our knowledge of it. That can't be controversial, can it?
Oh, no, you hit it right on the head. And your key words there, Lori, were adding to what we knew before. So that doesn't mean erasing what we knew before and replacing it with something else. It's adding to that. And so if you get, here's the perspective of someone in 1920. Here's, through a better lens, we can see this, and that adds to that. It doesn't erase what was there before. It says, no, but with different perspective, with different experiences. That's the irony of history, of course, is that we're writing history every day, but we don't understand it while we're writing it. We don't understand it until later. You look back at President Clinton or President Nixon. I mean, even President Trump, we really can't evaluate it yet. You know, many of us have tried. But you have to do that with perspective. And so here's a parallel that's really interesting. If you've seen the Ken Burns documentary on baseball, he talked about some racism in baseball. And a lot of those things were very subtle then that at the time we didn't realize. But you look back through today's kind of things, you say, oh, yeah, there was this extra layer of discrimination that was just part of the – I'm not even sure – many people who were being discriminated against understood that. But you get a new lens with that, and all of a sudden things change. But your whole key there, Lori, is adding to that, further research, further understanding, more perspective, but not necessarily erasing the perspective that they had at the time.
I think that's insightful. And that speaks to me as a former Marine, a female who was just, you know, vastly outnumbered. It's not, I mean, I'm still looking back at some of the policies and things and going, oh, that was incredibly sexist. How did I not see that?
Yeah. At the time.
Yeah. No, I didn't, because that was the entire culture that I was swimming in. And so there were things that I accepted that even I did that were sexist that I look back and I'm sort of shocked and appalled at. But some things that you don't know what. So I think that, anyway, you said it better, so I'll stop talking. Before we let you go, I want to ask about, you know, this inauguration and what happens next. Already Mike Card, Keystone XL, has been put on hold because Biden is now president of the United States. We saw the pardon of Paul Erickson and others because Donald Trump, you know, signed those pardons and commutations before he left office. So it is a time of great change. Let's talk about President Biden, Mike, and some of the things that he has done already that we're seeing are changes even here in South Dakota.
Well, I had to go back to some of my notes that I made in January of 2017, and I noticed a flurry of executive orders that revised executive orders that were issued by then-President Obama. And so now we see executive orders that are reversing some of the policies that were made by President Trump. And the critical facet that we have is finding a way to work together to get legislation in place rather than having temporary solutions to problems. And I think one of the issues that that you didn't mention that is going to come up is we have to figure something out with immigration. And it's been almost 25 years since we've been talking about comprehensive immigration reform, but we can't get it through Congress, so we have executive orders that basically set what the policy is, and they will go back and forth, and we don't get much certainty in terms of what is the policy of the United States, how should we be approaching people who wish to come to America to live.
Yeah.
And we have to be grown-ups about this. It means we have to compromise, which means we're not going to get everything that we want. Now, my fear is, as I said this about 1205 on the first I Day in January, the insurrection date, that we have to work together, and we so much for that.
Yeah, right. So that goes back to what John was saying before about, you know, if everyone who goes to Congress just signs on with their political party, you know, maybe I'm making a leap here, but Congress becomes less effective and it becomes up to the executive branch and then the courts to throw things. You know, President Trump signs something, it ends up in the Supreme Court. President Biden signs something, it ends up in the Supreme Court. It seems like we're not doing that work of legislating.
It's not a leap, Laura. You hit it on the head. And that is Congress is abdicating its responsibility by not deciding these things. And it increases the power of the executive branch. I don't know if it increases the power of the judicial branch, but it certainly shifts things over. And same with these continuing resolutions. If you can't get a budget done, then and you have these continuing resolutions, you really basically turn it over to the administration, to the executive branch, to make their own decisions. And each president does that. That's not a partisan thing either. Every president's going to do that. Remember, they turned over the whole negotiating of tariffs to the president, which is supposed to be originally was part of Congress. They, you know, and even declaring war, right? That used to be a thing of Congress. Now you just call it a police action or something, and you turn it over to the president. It's not a leap of understanding, Lori. You perceived it correctly.
Yeah, so I wish some you were of those, wrong, yeah, but go I ahead. Think you're right on target. I wish you were wrong, but you're right on target.
Yeah. So Keystone XL sits idle, you know, as expected. Does it sit idle for 4 years? And then, you know, if we get a new president, it goes right back to, you know, at some point that becomes bad for everybody to have that kind of uncertainty. Mike, talk about what that uncertainty looks like on the international stage. We leave the World Health Organization, we rejoin the World Health Organization. We leave the Paris Climate Accord, we rejoin. So international whiplash for, you know, what's happening in America. Tell us what that can mean for our international relations.
Well, it's the same as if we deal with someone whose opinion blows with the wind, and you learn not to trust them, you learn not to count on them, and I fear that that is what will happen to the United States. We won't be seen as a reliable partner in critical international negotiations, and whether these be with the European Union, whether they be with Great Britain, whether they be with the Asian countries who are trying to cope with an expansionist China, they're probably wondering, well, okay, so we have 4 years that we can count on this, and then the all deals are off, and we have to renegotiate. And I think that's just not good for a world order.
Right. Let's talk about some other things that were in the news this week, and that is the pardons that come. You know, again, John Hunter, every president has this power, and we often see a flurry at the end. What can we see about this outgoing administration based on the kinds of pardons that President Trump issued, especially at the 11th hour?
Well, if I had my act together, I would have emailed Mike Card last night and asked him, why did the framers of the Constitution decide it was a good idea to give unlimited pardon power to the president for federal crimes? I tried to look it up and didn't see much. At least I didn't understand exactly. You know, here's a situation where you have a Paul Erickson or anyone, right, that goes through a process. There's preliminary hearings, there's evidentiary hearings, there's a jury of your peers, there's lawyers on both sides, a judge, appeals. Why is it that someone who didn't observe any of those processes far away can sign something and have it erased? Mike, no pressure. No pressure.
Well, I too have those similar thoughts and realize that there is an equivalent at the state level. I think one of the differences is that there is a mechanism both in the state courts for dealing with pardons for state crimes that is given to the governor that's virtually unlimited, and at the federal level for the president. There is an Office of Pardons within the Department of Justice that investigates the petitions that are made for some form of redress, and whether that be a pardon, whether it be a commutation of the sentence, whether it be a reduction of the sentence, release from prison, or whatever. Alexander Hamilton is famous not just for being a musical star, but he wrote in the Federalist, I know, that was a cheap shot. He wrote in the Federalist that there's really two reasons why we want to do this. And one was to show mercy when the justice system seemed too hard or even off target. Well, that's a matter of perspective. The other one that Hamilton mentioned was to actually unify the country when it would take too long for Congress to redress the issue. And there he was speaking of issues such as Shays' Rebellion, where if we go back to the founding of our country, the Continental Congress could not get out of the states money to run the Revolutionary War. They couldn't get soldiers from certain states. They couldn't get munitions, and gunpowder was perhaps the most important. So the Continental Congress had to borrow money from French banks, who ironically in turn borrowed it from English banks. You'll follow that one through, and I'll let that one go. Yeah. But they had to tax, once we gained our independence, they had to start taxing, and the poor farmers and merchants were paying most of the bills based on the tax system. And so they were rebelling. And it was Hamilton's view that, you know, sometimes we need something like a pardon. They violated the law. Can we redress or address their punishment so that the country can move on? Hmm. Now, that, too, is subject to interpretation, just as mercy is. You know, with the Paul Erickson, as I read it, the signing statement essentially said, this is part of the Russian witch hunt. Although the crimes for which Mr. Erickson was convicted didn't really have anything to do with the Russian witch hunt. They had everything to do with defrauding people of money invested in the Bakken oil field to build single-family homes so that people could live there. The defrauding came when Erickson apparently gave money to a person whose initials were MB, which may have been Marina Butina, who was deported for trying to infiltrate American nonprofit organizations and convince them and lobby them to see things Russia's way. That really doesn't have much to do, although the name kept coming up, with the Russia hoax, as President called it, as President Trump called it. You know, I had to dig out my copy of the Mueller report. I made my way through about two-thirds of it before I finally gave up. And there were things there that were crimes. There was no hoax, although that's certainly the belief that most people have. But that's an example, when we go back, is that going to unify the country? No. Is this really an issue with the justice system being out of whack? It just doesn't fit the smell test. And whenever we have end of the term pardons, we wonder, why didn't this occur earlier? If right. it was a
And you don't have to look at your voter registration card to decide how you think about the Paul Erickson decision. You can just think about it and decide for yourself. You don't even have to listen to us.
Yep.
John Hunter, thank you so much for being here.
I want to see the t-shirt, Lori.
I'm not done with this. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mike Card, thanks so much.
Thanks to both of you. A good day to all.